Thanks. I'll start with the presenter disclosures for myself, W. Eric Kuhn. The following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months, and I have no relationships to disclose. So, as you heard, I had the opportunity to be a public health law fellow with the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And in my day job, I'm an assistant attorney general. I represent our state's public health department. In Colorado, the health department handles the patient side of the medical marijuana registry. So my interest in this topic is really from seeing Colorado go from a prohibition state to a medical marijuana state and now moving on to a recreational marijuana state. What I did for this project is a broad survey of literature on health effects of marijuana, and what I wanted to look for were any intersections that good evidence-based public policy recommendations could come out of. And so what I'm going to start with this morning is a brief overview of marijuana and the endocannabinoid system. This really sets the stage for how the for what the health research looks like. So as most people know, marijuana is a plant. Cannabis sativa is one of the most common strains. It's consumed as dried, shredded plant matter that's smoked, or concentrated resinous form, or baked into oil and put in edible products. And in the body, marijuana acts on the endocannabinoid system. It's a group of receptors and chemicals in the body that are responsible for a great deal of processes, including mood, memory, appetite, and pain suppression. There are two main receptors in the body. Researchers think there may be more, but there's CB1 that exists mostly on neurons and CB2 that exists mostly on immune cells. But both types of receptors are also found throughout tissues in the body, through central and peripheral nervous systems, testes, sperm, heart, uterus, embryo, and spleen. And the reason this is really important is because when we talk about marijuana acting on the body, we're talking about its effects on tissues throughout the body, not just the brain. So the other side of the system are the chemicals that act on those receptors, the endocannabinoids. There are about six in the body that are endogenous, and then the cannabinoids in marijuana that we talk about are usually, we talk about THC, which is responsible for the psychoactive effects. And the other one is cannabidiol, or CBD, which many people credit with the medicinal effects. And there are about 85 others in addition in marijuana that have effects on the two receptors. So when THC enters the body, it binds to CB1 receptors and inhibits the release of neurotransmitters. So depending on the neuron involved, that controls what the effect would be. The highest concentration is in the centers that control pleasure, memory, thinking, concentration, sensory and time perception, and coordinated movement. So that's why those are responsible for the high. The next thing I want to talk about is the state of the law. And under federal law, marijuana is fairly straightforward. It's on Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act, which means it has a high potential for abuse. There's no currently accepted medical use and treatment in the United States. And there's a lack of accepted safety for use of the drug under medical supervision. So the clear answer under federal law is that marijuana is illegal. But if you look at the state of state laws in the country, every state on green has some form of decriminalization or medical marijuana scheme. And there are actually a ton of different combinations in different states. I group them into four categories for purposes of this presentation. The lightest green have decriminalized possession, so it's not necessarily legal, but there's no criminal penalty. The next category, there is medical marijuana, but with no dispensaries. So in those states, patients can legally possess and use marijuana, but they have no legal way to purchase it. The next step up from that are medical marijuana states that have dispensaries. So this was like the Colorado model, or is currently like the Colorado model, where there is both a legal way to use and possess the drug and a legal way to purchase it. And then Washington and Colorado, as I'm sure everybody has heard, have passed recreational marijuana. As of January 1st in Colorado, you'll be able to walk into a recreational pot shop and purchase marijuana for recreational use. So the big message here is when I was doing at least informational interviews with health departments across the country, there seems to be somewhat of a reluctance to engage on this issue. Public health departments hate pot, which makes sense. But the big message here is that marijuana is coming to your state or a state near you, and so now is the time to get involved in this issue. when the industry is young, when regulators are interested, and when you really have an opportunity to make an impact. So as I said, what I wanted to look at is where intersections are on big health effects. So I surveyed a lot of different health studies, and I'm just going to talk about big 30,000 foot view intersections. The first one is with adolescents, and research shows that many of the health harms are magnified for people who start in adolescence. Some of the effects that would be reversible in adults are permanent for children. And this is why this is such an important issue. This is data from the Monitoring the Future survey that looks at perceived harm and use among 12th graders from 1975 to 2012. And if you look at the chart, you can see that the perception of harm is inversely correlated with use. This is important in marijuana states because the societal message is shifting from marijuana is a drug that's bad to marijuana is medication, or in recreational states to marijuana is just like alcohol. So we have increased use and we have changing societal messages among a group that is particularly susceptible to some of these health harms. Surveying a bunch of the studies, these are only some that jumped out, but testicular cancer rate triples from marijuana use starting in adolescence. The addiction rate in lifetime doubles. There's a greater decrease in IQ from use. The IQ decrease is irreversible. So with adults, the IQ decrease is reversible, but for adolescent users, that is not true. And there's a link between use in adolescence and later psychotic experiences. The next big intersection is with pregnancy, which probably doesn't come as a surprise to anyone. But THC crosses the placental barrier and accumulates in fetal tissues, particularly in the developing brain. There's an increased risk of anencephaly, which is a baby being born without most of its brain. And if you look at this chart, going from your right to the left, neonates to young adults, all of the items on this chart are different studies that have identified these risks for a given age period. But the common factor is they all go back to prenatal exposure from marijuana. So as you can see, there's literally a universe of potential harms from prenatal marijuana exposure that are long-lasting and pretty varied, actually. Next intersection is with frequency of use. Again, looking at some of the same studies, testicular cancer risk triples, but if you're a heavy user for more than 10 years, you have about a 6.5 times more likely risk of testicular cancer. And this study was talking in particular about non-seminomas, which tend to be more aggressive, harder to treat, and younger time at diagnosis. The addiction rate is 3 to 5 times more likely with daily use. There's a greater decrease in IQ. And then not necessarily linked to frequency, but longer exposure to marijuana is linked with a greater risk of psychotic experiences. Another issue that shouldn't surprise anyone is drug driving. As states have increase in access, increase in use, and changing messages, we have more folks on the roads who've consumed marijuana. Marijuana's consumption is linked to a near doubling of the risk of the driver being involved in a crash involving death or serious injury. And this next bullet point really highlights the public policy debate on this topic. Functional MRI imaging reveals that in occasional smokers, marijuana globally alters activity of main brain networks involved in cognition despite low THC concentrations. So the big debate is, how do we decide what impairment looks like? Is there a blood concentration of THC that across the board equals impairment? What about occasional smokers versus tolerance versus longtime smokers? So those are all issues. I think that's actually a great opportunity for further research. In Colorado, we settled on a 5 nanogram per milliliter standard that is a permissible inference. But there's so much debate about what this means and what the right levels are. So I think this is a big opportunity policy-wise. Next issue is around dose, purity, and packaging. In terms of dosing, a big issue for consumers of the product is what's the amount of THC or CBD that's in the plant? How do you test it? How do you label it? And how do you securely package it? So at least one of the models, the ideal models that was articulated, was the testing should happen at the production site. So you should grind everything up, take samples, aggregate those samples, do the testing, and then package it and label it in secure packaging at the site with some kind of regulator. So that's obviously a huge undertaking, but that's what I've heard is the ideal model for this issue. But then if we talk about purity, if you look at this picture, this is where your medicine or your recreational drug is being grown in a grow house. Pesticides, herbicides, mold, fungus, bacteria, viruses, and other contaminants have been shown or have been found on marijuana from grow operations. For public health departments, this is a huge issue. For one thing, public health departments can't test purity in a substance that is inherently adulterated with an illegal drug under federal law. Public health departments receive federal dollars. There are a host of issues. But on the other side of that, citizens in the states are consuming these products and still need to be protected. I don't have a good answer for that, but this is a huge opportunity for further policy work. And then packaging is the last really big marijuana issue. This is from a DEA seizure in a non-medical marijuana state, but these are edible products. And as you can see, they're in foil-wrapped packages that have trade dress that looks like candy bars, but with clever name changes like Butterfinger. The big issue with these are kids. In Colorado, we've had an increase in emergency department visits with kids who are accidentally exposed to marijuana. And if you think about these products, there is nothing noxious in the product inherently, like there would be with alcohol, that would stop a kid from eating it. In fact, it looks like candy. It's in a foil wrapper. They can easily do it, or they can easily ingest the product. So not necessarily with intentional marketing of kids like we might think of with other products, but accidental marketing with kids is a huge issue. So the conclusions from the survey of the literature, and obviously there are a lot of details that I didn't go into. I'm happy to share those with you, with anyone who's interested later. Reduce use by children, adolescents, and pregnant women. Reduce frequency of use of marijuana by adults. Reduce drugged driving. Work to limit marketing to children and accidental access by children. Work with regulators to address dose safety and purity. And I think possibly most importantly for many public health departments is simply to get started and engage on this issue now. We would take questions at the end.